citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We've used science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you, and you too.
So Todd, they, at work for my birthday, they bought me an older book. It looks like it's maybe from the 80s for Clean Jokes for Kids, Volume 2.
Okay.
And this is one of the classics out of that book. What are tropical fish's favorite food?
I don't know.
Reef fried beans. They're all that caliber.
That is amazing. I wonder whose like job it was to either.
I would love that
cultivate job. That list. Like... Or, well, welcome to another episode of the Mark and Todd Cast. I'm one of your hosts, Todd Workoven, and with me, as always, is Mark Middleton. How are you, Mark?
I'm really well today.
And I didn't mean to. I do have something to play here. You know, based off of your joke, but and I'm glad you brought up work because. I'm never fully convinced that your weekly dad joke meetings, or maybe they're daily. I don't know how often you force.
It's now three times a day, or three times a week. It's now three times a day. It's now three times a week: Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Okay. So I asked some of your coworkers what their response, and I was kind of surprised. So here's.
You know, he can just do everything there is to do, and there's only one other person in the world that can do that, and that's Barbara Streisand. He is. An inspiration to this town. That's what he is.
So I was surprised that was their reaction. So that was brought to you courtesy of Waiting for Guffman. I tried to find the other clip because for the last month or so, there's a part of Waiting for Guffman where Corky St. Clair, who the main character is talking with someone else, and the other person is Bob Balaban is the actor's name. Is trying to give Corky some bad news, and so he's trying to say it.
And the cast is kind of nearby,
right? There's people standing by, and so Corky says to him, "Why are you talking so? Can you talk a little louder?" And so the guy says, "Oh, you want me to talk louder in this?" And then Corky goes,
"Now that's too loud. You can just talk like a human."
And so all the time when we adjust our headphones, well, now that's too loud.
Now that's too loud.
So I tried to pull that, but I couldn't find a good one. But I did find that one. I ended up, I think I mentioned
home
this.
And bite my pillow.
Bite my pillow is what I'm going to do. But that actor who played that clip I just played, I contacted him once, probably around the year 2000, because I was working at KO. Then and I just sent him an email because like the internet was brand new and like you can find people's names. And I sent him an email. And told him that like, oh man, you were so great in that movie. And he wrote back and he was like super nice about it. And he was really cool about it. So
I love that movie.
Anyway, that was the story about.
Cool.
That
So I brought show and tell today. It's this. So
it looks like a mini Xbox One. It was heavy.
It's sizable and it's technically empty right now. So.
Oh. Did you get me lead?
So no, I didn't get this for you. So this was a gift for me from Nick.
Okay.
And so.
So yeah, is this
there's also an accompanying app for my iPhone that goes with this.
Of course there is. Okay, should I open this?
Yeah, go ahead and open it just so you can see like what it is.
Does it slide out? Is that
yeah,
what I'm going?
Okay. Exactly.
That's what I'm going for. Ooh, it's pretty. It's a little bamboo-covered box, maybe, and the thing slides like a secretary's
just pull
desk.
Pull that tab straight up.
Oh.
So this is
a tiny picnic.
This is the lunchbox reimagined. Okay.
Is it really reimagined?
So it's a box.
Oh, plastic, nice.
And. There's chopsticks, there's silverware that's all magnetized. In the wings of that box,
yeah.
inside. So if you pull one of that plastic thing out, inside there's a little thing with a ring on it that you can kind of pull that. That's a I just got out of the freezer, and so you take that and put it in the freezer.
Okay, so that's a little freeze pack. It is like a little rations, little lunch pack. That's pretty neat, though.
Yeah, it's pretty fancy. So you with the app.
That's right. This comes with an app. Okay.
So the app.
Hold on. Let's reset here.
So this is called Prep.
This is a lunchbox that kind of closes like a clasp purse for the most part, like your grandma's giant pillbox purse.
And it's got a bamboo lid.
Yes, it's very beautiful. Yeah, very sturdy, very well made. And there's a couple containers for food inside.
Right, and silverware and chopsticks.
And now we need an app.
You need an app.
Okay, so walk me through the app.
So the app gives you access to the to recipes that fit conveniently in that set of containers, and you select the meals that you want for the week, and then it gives you a shopping list for those items, and then you can go to the store and buy those items.
So the app will show you how to make
food
tiny portions,
right? Exactly.
Okay. So it is a beautiful little box, and it's very well put together, and comes it comes with chopsticks for your
potato chips.
Exactly. So it was a Kickstarter that Nick got for me two Christmases ago.
Oh my gosh.
And it finally arrived today.
Wow. So, comes in a nice little bag too. That feels
a little
like
insulated bag.
Wow. And
yeah, it's fancy. It looks cool, but it is it's the most hipster thing I have ever that I own now.
That is pretty amazing. I'm trying to figure out. You said there's magnets in here too. And I feel like
no. Well, not for the plastic.
I feel like the plastics are sticking together.
But I know. So these.
Okay. The silverware sticks.
The silverware.
And then goes through a little loop to hold them in.
Yeah, and then it's got little chopsticks over here.
Wow. So now you gotta
make little meals.
Now you gotta make bento.
Make a little
with
bento.
Your app for the recipes for small portions.
Prepped. So prepped is
apostrophe D. Apostrophe. It's not. No, I guess it's not gangsta. I guess it's just hip.
It's hip.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Nice. Two Christmases ago.
Yeah, this was bought in 2015.
Wow, that's hilarious.
So
news. I pulled some news.
You pulled some news. I pulled some news as well.
Perfect.
So Google's deep learning AI project now diagnoses cancer significantly faster and more accurately than humans. So the deep learning AI receives all the data, and
from just the tests that they're running,
from tests and reporting, and including X-rays or MRIs, and it takes all the data, and it's got an 89%. Success rate of properly diagnosing the, taking the symptoms and diagnosing the cause versus humans that are between 75% and 78%.
Wow. That's interesting. Is that when it's not busy playing Go or whatever that Chinese game is?
It can do that too.
In between. Yeah, it's doing
that at the same time.
I picture one of those robot arms, kind of like these these mic holders that we're having, that just has a claw and he's playing chess on the side.
Right.
Can you turn my headphones down a little bit?
Yes.
We have new headphones.
We have new headphones.
It's throwing me off.
And
well, now it's too loud. Okay, that's good.
Okay. So this one's a little interesting to me. There's
the Mark and Todd cast.
The Mark and Todd cast. So there's an organization called New York Genome Center, and they are testing the data storage capabilities of DNA. And so using genome sequencing technology, they can write code into DNA, have it reproduce, and take that data back out of another string of DNA. Right.
Okay. A, I don't like that at all. I've heard about that, and it, here's what I don't understand. Just kind of as a
Before you get too far, here's what they stored in one sequence of DNA. It contains 72,000 DNA strands, each 200 bases long, and I don't know what a base is. So I'm sorry.
Seven ergs.
So they stored a full computer operating system. An 1895 French film, an Amazon gift card, a computer virus, a Pioneer plaque, and a study by informational theorist Claude Shannon into the DNA. They then had it reproduced. They extracted the data with zero errors.
I don't like this one bit.
So
I don't understand how, like, what is it that they're putting on the DNA?
They are recording, you know, DNA is just literally sequences of the adenine, guanine. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And they using, you know, then RNA makes a copy of it and creates a new DNA sequence, and that process of reproduction passes on that information.
Right.
And so they are able to inject it into a DNA strand.
Okay, here's the part that's losing me. I know that you're trying to gloss over.
By injecting,
oh, you mean
I
the most
mean...
fascinating part of the conversation? Yeah, they do that, but then they can take it back out and read it.
Right. So I read this on Reddit, of course,
okay.
And of course the comments were like, what an amazing plot for a movie. So my parents encoded a message into my DNA.
Oh, weird.
And then they died. And years later, you know, using DNA, I find a JPEG of my great grandma or whatever, you know, that solves the murder.
This file only works on Real Player. I'm screwed.
It's been dead for years.
It's still buffering. I tried to explain to a teenager what Real Player was, and I was like, oh, you don't know the pain.
It was the one with it was so small with all the ads around it.
And then it did nothing but buffer.
You were just like,
so And maybe you don't know the answer, I guess, but like, I mean, what are they, how are they encoding it, I guess is my question. Is there a short answer to that?
Well, they're able, like I used to do the website for a company in Wilsonville, actually, called Oligos, etc. And Oligos are the sequences of RNA and DNA. And they...
It seems like a weird company to have the et cetera on the end of
Oligos,
the name, you know?
Et cetera.
You know, and some other stuff that goes along with that. Not important enough to name,
they
but you
were,
know,
they were a wacky group of people.
Wow.
Using really high-tech equipment, they can generate custom strands of DNA in the laboratory.
Okay.
And so they are layering, I don't know how they do it, but it's literally genetic engineering.
Seems weird that you can do like literally encode anything in the universe using like those four proteins or whatever that make up DNA.
I've got like 20 messages to catch up on here, and most of them are Dan McConnon.
Okay, let's take a little pause.
So Keith Westra says, Todd.
Hi, Keith. I went to school with him.
Nice. Dan McConnon, does it include sake shot glasses? No. But it does have a little sauce cup inside one of the,
it's like a communion cup size.
Right.
Sauce thing.
Is there a Jack Daniels compartment by Brett Charles Martin, my old skydive instructor and good friend?
That would just be the bottle of Jack Daniels that I carry around with me, right, is where I keep my Jack Daniels.
And a Hello Kitty slot. Oh, very cool. WebMD also diagnoses cancer quickly, but I suppose accuracy is important. That's Dan McConaughey. That's absolutely true. Which cancer do you want?
That is amazing.
A DNA base is a pair of the two bases as linked in the chain, same as two bits, or rather a rung on the ladder. So, you know, it's the, I don't remember which go with which, but right. Adenine with guanine and whatever. So they they are using chemicals as they are combined to create DNA strands as a data storage string.
That's so weird.
And they did a lot. And then they got it back out. They were able to read that over on the other side with zero errors. So it wasn't like a 1% loss rate of data. It was,
I feel like we had a story a long time ago about encoding information on DNA, and we had the story was about how much it could hold, and it like literally could hold everything in the world whatever.
And so
that, I don't, but see, the other thing I don't understand, and you see that, I always see this like in pictures of like for in vitro fertilization or for other procedures that they're doing on a cellular level. I don't understand how you can get something small enough to tinker with those really small things. You know what I mean? Like, how do you get a needle so small that you can put it in a single cell? And then how do you, like, is it like in Looney Tunes when the coyote pulls out like the womp, 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 and it's just like 10,000 things that get a little smaller just to get into the cell? I don't get, like, all that small scale stuff just kind of blows my mind. It's crazy. Anyway, I won't be distracted by that anymore. Claude Shannon. It's Claude Shannon. That's nice. I didn't catch that.
And go ahead.
It could be I'm wrong on this. One of my favorite phrases lately. I can't endorse the thing I'm about to say, but I think I found out a difference. We were talking about Venmo either last week or the week before, and I was trying to figure out the difference. And I think it works more when you use PayPal. Do you have to have money in your PayPal account to use it?
Depends on the type of transaction.
Okay.
So if I am sending from one person to another, that's a different type of transaction from my PayPal account to a business PayPal account that is qualified. And so for those business transactions, I have my debit card attached to my PayPal account, and it withdraws that. It has a backup method of my bank using ACH. The whole brilliance around PayPal and what Elon, like, why PayPal had such grip, had such great success, is they skirted around the processing fees by using ACH transfers, which don't have the same processing fees as credit and debit cards. So they prefer you use bank transfers for everything.
Right.
And so, yes, I can make certain transactions without a PayPal balance.
Because I believe the appeal was because there was a whole fiasco where I was going to send someone some money, and they had sent me money on Venmo, and I was trying to figure out how to get it back to them. And I was looking for like transfer money into your Venmo account, and I couldn't find one. So I think the appeal of it is it's just literally your debit card that you can use, as opposed to the PayPal, which sounds like it. So I think, cause it is at the bottom of the, one of the emails I got, Venmo is owned by PayPal.
Oh, interesting.
So I thought I don't know if they acquired them or if it's just an offshoot, but.
And is PayPal still owned by eBay? Because eBay bought PayPal.
Oh, I don't know. Originally. I don't know. I thought G.I. Jones was still in business. That's 15 true. Years ago.
Okay. Good job.
Oh, and also, so a couple weeks ago, I think we talked about that amazing store in Chicago called American Science and Surplus that I love. That was kind of like the Wacky Willies here in Portland.
Yeah.
And I got their catalog in the mail finally. And it's this amazing catalog that is sort of done like the Trader Joe's newsletter. It's got illustrations of all the stuff and like wacky little write-ups, and it is just the coolest. And so you went to the website. So
I've been looking at the website for, you know, the last half an hour as we've been prepping for the show.
Yeah.
And so at SciPlus, so SCIPLUS.com, there's hundreds and hundreds of products, and it's everything from a quartz movement for a clock for $3 or you know, like every
just on this page I have it open. There's a water tester, a soil kit, a bat, a bat house, a mini Stirling engine for your desktop, kitchen lab test, musicals. It's just got so many random things, a pickaxe, a chemistry 101 kit.
Tons of LED things, tons of like,
yeah, little, it's cool. And like,
models, tiny brushes.
If you're ever in Chicago, it is totally worth a trip going to and spending like a little afternoon there if you can ever get there in person.
A toy train in a tin can.
I know. So I'm gonna put this down now, but it's at SCIPLUSCIPLUS.com, and so you can order a catalog too through the mail and get on their mailing list. So there was that, and I wanted to quick talk about last night. I watched when did I watch it? Anyway, I watched Snowden, the movie with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and you asked me. I mentioned it.
I haven't seen earlier.
Okay, yeah. I'll make sure to spoil it like I did with The Arrival. Read the Wikipedia entry about it. Sorry, but I wanted to. It's not a great movie, and I didn't know until the end. I think it's an Oliver Stone movie. It's not a great movie. I wanted it to be more. It's pretty good, but what really got to me and like really kind of freaked me out was, like, the story they were telling was real as far as the surveillance we were under, how they were doing it, all these back channels of how we were allowing it, what we were able to do. And it is just terrifying.
Yes.
Like, how under surveillance we all are at all time. Like, I actually got up to do this and I didn't have the right Band-Aid, but I'm going to full on put a little Band-Aid over my little computer, camera on my computer. It is scary.
So I've read a couple things, and there are a couple key, like, you're probably being monitored by the NSA. You are definitely being monitored if you meet these couple criteria. Uh-huh. And if you've spent any time outside of the United States recently, you know, in the last few years, then you are definitely being monitored by the NSA. And I lived
you went to Italy.
I was in Italy for a year and a half. And so I know that.
Meanwhile, I'm going through, going to Tanzania via Kenya.
So.
So yeah, I mean, it is
a big portfolio of documentation on you.
Yeah, so I mean, I would say the movie's worth watching. I want, like I said, I wanted it to be better, but just Joseph Gordon-Levitt is good, although he kind of
affects his voice to make him sound like Edward Snowden, and that kind of got old.
But it's definitely worth checking out. But we were talking also about The Daily Show. Usually, I watch The Daily Show the day after when it gets on Hulu. And we've talked before about how it's never like in the favorites thing, even though like you watch it every day and I usually watch it every day. It's not, you always have to literally search for it.
Right.
And so the other day I went to search for it and I couldn't find it. And I went to the Comedy Central section and it wasn't there.
Right.
And so I frantically texted you, "Where's my Daily Show?"
Right. So I ultimately found it on Hulu as an empty page that came back as a 404.
Interesting.
Because, it stays in your history as viewed things. And so I literally just went back in my history and browsed through my history and it went to a page. This page is no longer available.
Wow.
I'm like, oh, crap. And so Viacom, the owners of MTV and everything else, including Comedy Central, their contract with Hulu expired. They're in talks, but who knows?
Wow.
And so we have Xfinity with DVR, and so fortunately that's my backup.
Yeah.
And and so now I have to share that password with you.
Interesting.
so yeah. And then let's see what steel jaw harps are available on SciPlus.com.
Wow.
So add that to your cart when you're, you know, getting eyedroppers or whatever else you're getting. Then I saw this video of in Japan, they've got quadricopters. I won't call them drones for your sake.
Thank you.
That are equipped with flamethrowers, and they're using those to clear out certain situations. So they've got a net that got this cloth net that's up on a series of high wire power lines that was in a windstorm or whatever. And so they just take the blowtorch wielding quadricopter and they just
Wow.
Eradicate.
That's pretty extreme. That's pretty extreme.
It is extreme and awesome and terrifying at the same time. And
oh,
so
okay, here we go. We got a little video.
So
oh, yeah, it looks like a
windstorm. They got a little net up there on the thing, and so they just bring out this.
So what other uses are they? I mean, is this exclusively for things that are caught in wires? Okay, here comes a little drone. Oh my gosh! And it's totally like a battle bot. It's just.
Yes.
That and the flaming debris rains down on the stand passers right. by below.
So
wow.
And it's done.
I'll put the link to the video we just watched on the webpage if anyone wants to see that. But yeah, that's crazy. I'm sure you can just search flame throwing quadcopter.
It's there. I think there's a couple more. Did we talk about the new robotics, the one on wheels that jumps and looks terrifying?
I don't think we've talked about it.
Oh my gosh! We need to talk about okay. it. Boston Robotics. Boston Dynamics.
Sadly does not sell stock. It's not a publicly owned company.
But they sell
terror
nightmares. Is what they sell. And they sell
a dystopian future.
They sell the view of our dystopian future. And we will use those videos of like, remember when this was, you know, comical?
Remember we were in control?
Remember when we made you?
Have you ever seen, what's the movie? It's a terrible Stephen King movie from the mid-80s. He directed the movie. Anyways, about cars coming to life. It was about trucks coming to life.
Oh, not...
Maximum Overdrive.
Maximum Overdrive.
There's a crazy waitress character in that who, like, at the end...
Large Marge.
Probably. She just runs out and starts screaming at all the possessed semi-trucks, "We made you!" Like, over and over and over. That's what that just reminded me of.
Awesome.
Well, let's take a little break from that. We'll go to the Unipiper a second. He's going to talk about, he got a Nintendo Switch. He's got some movies. He's going to tell us about his escape room experience. He did the Resident Evil escape room. So we'll check in with him, take a little short break, and then we will come back. Hello, Mr. Unipiper, roaming the hills of Portland on your unicycle. How are you tonight?
Hey, Todd. Good. Not so much of that this weekend.
Oh, yeah. I guess it's a little... The weather's a little inclement for that, I suppose, at this point, isn't it?
A little damp. It is,
but I was thoroughly distracted with other forms of self-entertainment this weekend. I picked up one of the brand new Nintendo Switch game consoles.
Nice. So how I have heard there a lot building up to it because the older boys in the house I work are video game nerds, and so I listened to one of their podcasts, and they've been talking, you know, up and up to this. And from what I've heard from both cynical people and from fans, that it's pretty great. So what is it like?
It is really, really neat. Nintendo was super smart in the market that they were aiming for, because the console game market is shrinking, as is the portable handheld game market, both from competition from things like mobile apps and cell phones. So Nintendo went right in the middle and tried hitting what is left of both markets at the same time. So essentially the console itself is a tablet, but it comes with a docking station. So in real time, you can play it as a handheld tablet, or you can throw it into the dock and it goes straight to your TV and you can keep gaming.
How does that differ from the Wii U then? Because the Wii U was able to do that as well, wasn't it?
So that was the only Nintendo console that I, in recent memory, that I did not own.
Okay.
But my understanding is that the handheld component of the Wii U, it was really large.
It's
really fat, not something you're going to want to stick in your pocket or your backpack. But I think it had to be within range of the console itself in order to play the game. So you couldn't actually leave the house.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah.
Have you played any Zelda?
Yes, that's of course the only thing I bought, and it's a funny story. Like, I wasn't even planning on buying the thing, but Sarah sends me to Fred Meyer's on the day that it comes out because we're out of coffee. So I'm there right as the store is opening because we live so close.
Right.
And I see this group of people in line, and then it immediately hits me that, oh, they must be in line for the Nintendo Switch, which I know is coming out today. And I walk over to kind of check out the scene, and they have a sign posted that says, we have 45 units available for sale. And there's about 20 people in line. And the temptation was too great.
Too much.
Yeah.
Well, I know. Yeah, I know someone who went stood in line at midnight at a GameStop or something like that for them.
Yeah, I did too. And I posted on their Facebook wall, and I was like, I just walked over this morning.
Well, that's cool. So you give it a thumbs up.
I give it a thumbs up. And the funny thing is, like, as great as the console is, what is going to be remembered and go down is in as much infamy as the console itself is how the games taste.
What?
Yeah. Have you heard about this?
I have not.
Okay, so the games come on cartridges again. They're really small. So Nintendo went back from the optical media, the CDs and DVDs, and now you buy cartridges again. And they're really small. They're smaller than the size of an SD card, but a little bit larger than the size of a micro SD card. And so smart on Nintendo's part, they purposefully made the plastic taste awful to prevent children and small animals from eating them.
Wow.
Yeah.
But not losing them and complaining to their nanny that they can't find them anymore.
Right. So, of course, as any Switch owner probably did, as soon as I found this out, I had to try it myself. So
and?
I put my Zelda in my mouth, and it was one of the most revolting things I have ever tasted. It is up there, it's etched into my memory with, like, Marmite and things I will not forget. I don't know how they did it. It does not have any odor whatsoever. But as soon as it touches your tongue, it is somewhat of a metallic taste, but at the same time, it has the flavor of needles impounding your tongue.
My gosh!
It is such a bizarre sensation. I'll have to let you lick my Zelda.
Yes, note to self. Get that done right away. That's crazy, though.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, anyways, I'm going to actually be traveling to Amsterdam soon. The city of Portland is sending the Unipiper to Amsterdam in a couple of weeks.
And, real Amsterdam? Like Amsterdam, Holland, Amsterdam?
Yeah, not yes. Vansterdam. Not
Amsterdam proper.
The city is sending you?
The city of Portland is sending the Unipiper to Amsterdam because they want to get rid of me, and I guess cheaper than Siberia. No, there is a... festival of sorts going on. There's a reality TV show in the Netherlands called The Mole, and the most recent season they filmed in Portland. So it's finished airing, I guess, and they're having sort of a fan appreciation event. There's going to be stars from the show there, and since it took place in Portland, they wanted to have a representation of the host city.
Wow.
Be traveling as part of the delegation to represent Portland.
So how many people are going?
I don't know exactly. I know there's at least two or three other performers. I will be traveling with Mr. Statue.
Nice.
We all know from the movie The Hunted.
Yes. He did make a cameo.
As seen in The Hunted, of course.
Yeah. And then I think just some random jugglers and stuff.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if he was the most talkative person who ever lived and he like sat next to him in the airplane and just couldn't shut him up?
I am going to find out because I am sitting next to him.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that is amazing.
Yes.
So how long are you going to be there?
Not very long. I'm going out on a Thursday and I'll be back on Sunday.
Wow.
Just an in and out, but they're direct flights, which Portland now has to Amsterdam, which is really cool.
That's great.
Nice. You'll have to, and you can get them in the Amsterdam airport if you can't get it on the street, but you've got to get some stroopwafel.
Yes, yes.
Oh, it is so good.
Yeah, I will bring some of those back. So that's ultimately why I caved in and bought the Switch is because I knew I had a long airplane.
Oh, right. What's the battery life on that?
I guess
you'll find out.
5 or 6 hours. Yeah.
Okay. Do airplanes have plugins in yet.
Some of them do. Some have USB and some have other things.
Yeah. Interesting. In my recent experience, it's been about a 50-50 hit or miss.
Huh. Nice. All right. What else have we got going on?
Let's talk some movies briefly. There's a couple of cool things going on. The movie Logan is playing, which I had a chance to check out last night.
Oh, yeah?
And I think it's going to be an early contender for, you know, best film of 2017. It is amazing.
Wow. Huh. I've heard good things about it.
Yeah, they really, if this truly is going to be Hugh Jackman's last turn as Wolverine, they're sending him out in style.
It is pretty crazy to think, like, to me, in my head, Hugh Jackman is still kind of relatively a new star.
I know.
The X-Men movie came out in 2000.
I know.
Like, what? Almost 20 years ago, that movie came out.
Wow.
Just crazy.
Huh.
More time in between the first X-Men and this one than there was between Return of the Jedi and Phantom Menace.
Oh, now you're going all pyramid statistics. yeah, so that's playing all over town, but I recommend you check it out at the Baghdad. It would be my theater of choice.
Nice.
Also playing this week, Starship Troopers at the Academy.
Fantastic.
That's definitely one that would be cool to see in theaters again.
Yeah, yeah.
Brief follow-up update. I did experience the Resident Evil escape room last week that I talked about that I would be doing.
And
it was incredibly disappointing.
Oh.
Yeah, I could probably go on for a while about why it was disappointing, but let's just say that the puzzles were not up to the same caliber as our previous escape room experience.
Now, how is it then that you didn't, because I think, spoiler alert, I don't think you made it in time.
I did not. Yeah, you must have been reading your Facebook.
What were you doing for the first 20 minutes of the escape room?
Pretty much the first spoilers, if anyone's going to go, which I can't recommend at this point. But for the first 15 minutes, we were stuck in a room looking for the clue to answer the puzzle. And we were basically not picking up the photos on the wall because I thought we had been told, we all agreed later when we talked about it, that they told us do not touch paintings on the wall. But sure enough, the solution was behind some of the paintings, which you had to lift off of the walls.
Wow.
So they told them, don't touch the things on the wall. First clue. And they had you had a staff member there looming over you. Is that true? Yes.
It is true the whole time, which was really, it felt kind of nerve wracking to have, you know, the person who knows the answer just like 2 feet away from you the whole time.
Right. So, wow. Well, that's a bummer.
There are plenty of other escape rooms that I think would be a lot better, worth your money spent in Portland.
So was the production like what made it Resident Evil-y?
Oh man, that was disappointing as well. It was essentially just a generic escape room with like, we'll put up a couple Resident Evil posters. Look, there's a sign. Doesn't this make you feel like you're in the game? Spoilers, a Resident Evil escape room has no zombies.
Does it have a Mila Jojovic or whatever her last name is?
There is none of her either. On a scale of 1 to 10, I would give the horror element a 0.5.
How many padlocks were there?
Oh my God, that was all that the puzzles were. There must have been for the whole thing probably 20 different padlocks.
Oh my gosh!
And padlocks and combination locks, and which felt tedious because the one that we did, there were all sorts of different ways to solve the puzzles using magnets and pH strips and stuff.
Wow. Well, that's cool to know that the one that is much better is the one that is here permanently in Portland and not the traveling one. So
yeah.
Portlandia.
Oh yeah. We mentioned it after, but we forgot to talk to you directly about your appearance on the season premiere of Portlandia.
Yeah, it wasn't the season premiere. It was like episode 5 or 6, whichever.
Oh, but it's the final season. Maybe that's what I'm getting confused. Yeah,
it is the final season. So I guess I just got in under the knife to get the Unipiper on Portlandia.
Seriously.
I think that was back in September. I went out for a day and was an extra. It was actually a really neat scene. The setup was that the characters and the mayor of Portland are in the process seceding from the country and form their own independent and weird state. And so I was part of a crowd of citizens gathered to cheer on the resolution to for Portland to secede. And I was dressed up like Uncle Sam Unipiper.
Right.
And as they're talking about secession, they zoom in on me. And of course, you know, I'm supposed to be Uncle Sam representing America. And then so as they're talking about secession, I kind of take my American flag hat off and sheepishly look around to see if anyone is looking at me there. So it was a really neat experience, and to say that I got to act in a scene as Kyle MacLachlan, one of my all-time favorite actors, was a really cool
experience. That's pretty great. That's pretty great. Well, cool. We have, speaking of TV then.
Yes, there is a very unique experience for everyone in Portland this week. The TV show Grimm, of course, we all know, is also filmed in Portland. The other big show that's filmed here, I think they're on season... I don't watch Grimm, so they're like on 7 or 8 or something.
Wow, yeah, I don't watch it either.
But they are, since it is coming to an end this week, they are. It's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So coming up, we're bringing this to you on the Mark and Toddcast before it has happened. So anyone
wow,
still do this. The 10th, 11th, and 12th are going to be auctioning off. I'm not sure if it's an auction or just a sale, but... they have a warehouse full of all the props, costumes, set decorations, furniture, everything from the show and the set of Grimm. They're going to be your chance to own. And they've got some pictures. It looks epic. There's, you know, everything from shoes and lamps. They have Portland police signs and like Max decorations.
Oh, wow.
Because, of course, the show actually takes place in Portland, so there's some local stuff, some local prop-type items, too. I think it's going to be a really neat thing, and I guess they're expecting a lot of interest. So they haven't announced where it's going to be yet. You have to check back, I think, probably on Thursday night on the website to figure out exactly where it's taking place and how to get in on that action.
Nice. Yeah, I did see a picture, and it looked like the warehouse at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It's about that size.
That's cool. Well, if... Oh, one of my headphones just went out.
That was, mine did, too.
Oh, now it's back.
That was weird.
Only two of us could relate to that. Well, if people wanted to find out more about you, where can they find that?
Please come check out the Unipiper and connect with me at my website, unipiper.com. Send me a message on Facebook. Let me know what you think of my segment. And if you have any news items you would like to hear reported, please... I'm always on the lookout for the weird goings-on in Portland, and you'll hear about it here first on the Mark and Toddcast.
Nice, yes. And also, next weekish sometime, we should be doing the next episode of Portland at the Movies, starring or about the classic, hilarious Burt Reynolds film Breaking In. So you can also hear the Unipiper upcoming on that.
Two thumbs up from
Siskel and Ebert. Ebert loves it, raved.
I bet if we surveyed 100 people, not one of them would have ever even heard of that.
No, they would not have. All right. Well, thanks for calling again. We will talk to you again later.
Okay. See you, Todd.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Bring on the musk.
I did never say that again.
Time to musk up.
That's fine. See?
Wow. Never ceases to amaze me.
I didn't know you were trying to quote that, and so it was just the horror of hearing that I think that I was grappling with.
Awesome. Yeah, so Elon Musk made an announcement this last week or late last week, and they have two individuals that will be flying a Falcon Heavy, the Dragon capsule on top of the Falcon Heavy.
The Eagle flies at midnight.
Okay, so their crew capsule is called the Dragon.
Okay.
And the Falcon 9 is the largest rocket that they have, and they strap three of those together to make a Falcon 9 Heavy, so it's actually three Falcon 9s.
Okay.
And so that
is... 27.
It's a Falcon 27. And so they, the The Falcon 9 Heavy is not flown yet, but that's on their path of things that they're doing. And so that will be flying soon. And then they're taking a crew capsule to the moon, circling the moon and returning to Earth. So how long of a journey is it? Is it 1 week? It's less than 1 week. I think it's like 4 days.
Yeah, I don't think it says there.
Yeah.
Last about a week.
Last about a week.
And travel deeper into space than any human has ventured before.
Well, if they slingshot around the moon at a higher lunar altitude than, because you'll go on the far side of the moon.
Right.
And as long as they are further from the lunar surface than the Apollo astronauts were,
right,
then they will be deeper into space than any other.
That's pretty good. And it said the article made it sound like the two individuals have been chosen.
Yes. They came to Elon with this idea, apparently. And I don't, we haven't heard who they are.
Okay.
And so I imagine
I wonder if it's a known quantity.
I don't know.
Probably someone from one of the Saudi princes.
Billionaires or something.
Huh.
Is it Uber CEO or something?
He's fleeing the country from bad press right
exactly.
now. Exactly. Fleeing the planet.
Must get out. And then you also added one about the lunar tourists risk rough ride.
Yes, these were the possible adverse experience you would have to space travel. This article is built around the whole idea that when you go to space, these would be the problems. So it's a nonstop vomiting, puffy face, and a constant need to pee is kind of the
all been there.
We've all been to, yes. Because it says the tendency for, quote, profuse urination, I hope my mom is listening again, is because all...
I was listening until I heard the word urination.
Why can't you just do one show
without
being
talking
horrifying?
About disgusting things? I love your mom.
Oh, I know. She liked our show about Mr. Rogers.
Of course.
Anyway, so yes, you'll be constantly going pee if you go to space.
So I work in the web sphere of technology things, and this last week had a terrible disaster of Amazon. So,
oh, right.
So Amazon, one of the mainstays of their business is not what you buy on the front end of Amazon. It is, they have packaged the services that build their website systems, and they have packaged a whole series of services that you can use as individuals or companies to host websites. So the Mark and Toddcast website is hosted AWS services,
now
Amazon Web Services.
Now you're speaking my language. I heard my own name there. Let me get a little closer here.
Yeah, as well as Portland the Movies.
Nice.
And so
at portlandatthemovies.com.
Exactly.
That, 4 episodes you can download for free.
And so they have some 43 or 44 different services that are part of the Amazon Web Services or AWS ecosystem. Everything from you have a server that you build in the cloud and then add an operating system to and build out your server, to different databases, different data transfer mechanisms, different security things, different things for IoT, for Internet of Things. They've got tons and tons and tons of services. And one of those services is called S3, or the Simple Storage System. And the S3 system, if we upload an episode of the Mark and Toddcast, that MP3 file gets stored in an S3 bucket, which is a folder that is used for files that don't change. And so it doesn't need a server to process things. It's just what we call a static asset. And so it is just a file.
Or stasset.
It's just a file, and it's stored in an S3 bucket. It's just a folder that then we can reference to anywhere on the web. So they were doing some testing, doing some very standard things. And one of the commands, they were to take out a number of S3 servers. And there was a typo, and the developer who was doing that, they didn't say how what the typo was, but I assume that they added a zero onto it, basically. Like, instead of delete these 100 servers, let's delete these 1,000 servers, or some effect like that. Because the it started very simply of just the S3 system on the East Coast had, and everything in their ecosystem is based on regions. And so their East Coast region S3 system was taken down by this one command, by this one developer inside AWS. And that started a trickle down cascade of other failures. And so many of our clients and of websites around the world were affected. Everything from Slack, which is a big used for business chat system. If you upload an image to Slack, that image goes to S3 and is referenced in there, things like that. But there were a ton of websites, video streaming services, anything that used a specific type of video player called a JW player, anything that used that was broken. And so, like, The Onion was down. You couldn't watch. You could go to the articles, but you couldn't see any of the videos. So a lot of the websites didn't, like, go down hard. They just were hit drastically. Their main assets were not available. Wow. And it's
freaky how literally one person can that system, it does not sound robust to me to put my faith into. Just upload everything into the cloud. Yeah, it'll be safe there forever. Meanwhile, Stanley Spadowski is mopping through the halls and bumps the wrong thing.
Right. And there's been incidents very similar to that. There's a there was a Git service that stores files and operating systems and programs. They had a similar situation where their backups failed, and a person did an action. He thought he was doing it on his test environment, but he was actually doing it on the live production environment. So he's like, "Oh, delete the database. The database is deleted. Let's use a backup. Ooh, the backup doesn't work." And then, well, the latest backup we've got is 6 hours ago by some other technician that happened to make a copy. Otherwise, it would have been 24 hours. It was just terrible sequences of events like this. And these are coming up more frequently as more cloud services are being utilized for everything. You didn't realize that you were on AWS, and we are. It is just it's a standard place to put web servers now. So a lot of hosting companies host their files on Amazon Web Services and then private label it and put it on the front. So you might think that you're hosting with one company, but you're actually, they are just managing your files on AWS.
Right. Wow. That's crazy.
Good times.
Good times.
My company's web services run on S3. Joy when it goes down. Dan McConnon. Yep. A whole bunch of stuff. Daylight savings time?
Sure.
So in Santa Fe, New Mexico, it looks like they've got a bill to keep New Mexico on daylight savings time.
This confused me for a long time because usually it's like, let's abolish daylight savings time, but they chose to stay on.
Right.
Daylight savings time, not to do away with it.
Because
it says Arizona does the opposite and does not observe it. So now Arizona and New Mexico are always going to be an hour different.
Oh, that's stupid.
So, like, they couldn't even solve that problem.
I think Hawaii also does not observe
There's like two of them. I didn't know if it was Hawaii or not. Well, they're on their own time zone. Well, I guess it was.
They are in their own time zone, but they don't observe daylight savings time.
But yeah, I thought it was interesting to stay on
that. Yeah,
but it must
changing sense. The clocks twice a year is hard. As we've heard, causes a lot of adverse health effects, heart attacks, car crashes.
I like the thought of actually, like actually moving your clock is what causes all those problems.
You're not supposed like a really to drive infomercial. And try and change it.
Wish you could keep up with daylight savings time. Wah, wah. Now you can.
Cool.
So yeah, they're gonna stay on. Which I mean, I'm hoping that much like marijuana legalization, I hope this daylight savings time thing is the beginning of a tidal wave of us all getting rid of that finally. At least we can maybe accomplish that in the pennieth in this next in these next few years.
Indiana and Arizona. So Indiana okay. doesn't
Indiana, that's random.
Huh. Yeah, that's random. Tell us about urine in the swimming pool.
Ooh, okay. I was going to tell you about a CRT as the CRT monitors.
Yes.
Nobody's making them anymore, so the classic arcade machines can't get replacement pieces, so there's no... Now, the one that you have in your kitchen, does it have a CRT screen?
It does have a CRT. It's a fairly modern... version though, it's not a classic arcade machine.
Okay, because I was reading why, and so the 29 inch CRT screens, which is the size that fits inside the arcade, there's less than 30 of them in stock right now, and so what they have to do is winding together a CRT tube with its electron gun requires a delicate touch. So you have to do this procedure where a laborer paints that. Paint on the inside of the TV tube, the conductive material, as it spins on a centrifuge, and then use a dipstick-like brush to coat the depths of the monitor with all that conductive substance. And then he has to use a flame that burns at 400 degrees Celsius to set it in. And if any debris or any dust or anything gets into that, it affects the life of the screen. So, like, nobody's doing this anymore. So they will switch... they'll still keep making arcade games, I would imagine, but they will all be with the LED screens, which don't look quite as nice, but then I guess you won't get, or LCD, not LED, LCD, but then at least you won't get burn-in, because I remember the Ms. Pac-Man game that I had, when you turned it off, you would still see burned into the screen the pattern of the first level of Pac-Man, which is pretty funny.
Dan McConnell just sent us an article about the 11 states... including Washington, that attempted last year to get rid of daylight savings time and all failed.
What?
So
there's a conspiracy behind there somewhere.
Do you hate the time change? You're not alone. Only 37% of Americans see the purpose of falling back in November and springing forward in March.
Because they always blame it on the farmers, and the farmers hate it too. Because they just got to get up in the dark, and then they got to work in after the dark.
So Arizona and Hawaii do not observe daylight savings time.
Interesting. And now New Mexico does, always.
Yeah. And so the list of states which considered opting out last year, Alaska, Florida, Idaho, Illinois, Michigan, Missouri, New Mexico, Oregon, Texas, Utah, and Washington.
This has to be like... the penny lobby or the copper lobby is the only reason we still have the penny. Seriously. So it's got to be something that makes money off of us changing our clocks once a year. And that doesn't make any sense unless it's a power grid thing, but that doesn't make sense.
Big
either.
Time Big is th- added it again. Dan says, that's awesome. We're Big Time Incorporated with the Big Time Lobby.
The Big Time Lobby.
That would be a great, great name. Do you remember long distance slamming?
No.
So there was this period of time when when you signed up for phone service, you would also choose the long distance carrier, and so many people would say, "I don't care. what, you know, you pick for me, whatever's the best, right? And so there was a series of companies, these shell companies created called I Don't Care, You Pick For Me, Whatever's the Best, Inc., right?
Right.
And so then they would come up and the operator would be like, oh, I don't care. And that was,
it's like a restaurant named I Don't Know What Do You Feel Like.
Right. And they would have atrocious fees, no service, terrible, like, but you asked for it. And that was right. recorded as a transaction. And
wow. I was just watching the pilot episode of The Golden Girls, which is now on, which is either now on Netflix or Hulu. I can't remember which one. But there was a joke about MCI long distance in the first episode. I'm like, wow, that's a joke. That doesn't work
that
anymore.
That doesn't work.
So you were asking how much urine is in a swimming pool? Well, a study finds this disturbing answer. So they use the presence of an ace sulfame, which is just known as ACE, a widely consumed synthetic sweetener, as a marker for how to detect urine. I was trying to make it sound classier, I guess.
I'm not
My
in.
Mom is still listening.
You're in.
So the research tested the ACE concentration over 3 weeks in two different sized pools. So based on the average levels of the detection, researchers estimated that one 220,000-gallon pool, which is about one-third the size of an Olympic swimming pool, had an estimated urine volume of 75 liters. The research also tested 270 samples from 31 pools and hot tubs from two Canadian cities, and this ACE was present in all samples. In the most egregious samples, ACE concentrations were 570 times greater than regular tap water. So they're testing an artificial sweetener that does not get metabolized by the body and mostly just, you know, comes out in your urine. So they're testing the water for that. But wouldn't something like that also come out in your sweat or in your... Like, I'm not...
That I believe so, yeah.
Because
especially in hot tubs.
Yeah, I mean, and
I'm
they're
sweating
saying,
a lot in hot tubs.
I mean, 75 liters of urine in a pool. I don't... I'm not going to say this is wrong, but come on. But they note that the urine itself is sterile. I had that argument with my brother because I always heard that. But he said it's not.
It
doesn't seem like it anyway.
Seems like
so. Discuss amongst yourselves. So it can react with disinfectants like the chlorine, and that's what makes your eyes red and irritated. But anyway, so that is what the new study says for how much urine is in your swimming pool.
And there's a big difference between peeing in the pool and peeing into the pool.
we lived in Southern California when I was growing up, and like a lot of houses down there, we had a pool in our backyard. And we'd always go to the pool supply store, you know, to buy chlorine and vacuums and stuff like that. And they would always have like zany little signs that you can hang up by your pool. And I always remember the one that says, we don't swim in your toilet, so please don't pee in our pool. Or my other one, welcome to our ool. You'll know that pee is... What is it missing?
Right.
Let's keep it that way or
there's
something
no,
like that.
There's no pee in our pool.
Right. That's it. Yeah,
oh. Let's keep it that way.
Let's keep it that way.
And Dan did the math. It's almost 20 gallons of urine. Imagine 4 5-gallon buckets just being poured in.
I really want the title of this show to be 20
gallons
of
urine.
And just send it awesome. Directly to my mom's friends.
Perfect.
All right. I think we had one story here left.
Your furry friend?
Yes, my furry friend. No, this is courtesy of my friend Don Taylor, actually, who posted this on Facebook. So a furry friend is a relaxing online purr generator for those lonely times, Mark, when a cat is not around. Furry Friend by MyNoise is an online adjustable frequency sound generator that makes a wonderfully relaxing purr noise. And it is a free iOS app. So I'll see if I can turn this on here. And I'll read the description here. So
nice.
So it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, like 10 different adjustment bars, like the sliders. And so you can like adjust the treble and the depth. So I'll just read what the write-up is. Cuddling up with a purring cat is certainly a relaxing experience. Scientific studies have shown that cat owners have lower blood pressure and can live longer than humans who don't own pets. A cat's purr is generally within the range of 40 to 200 hertz. In sound therapy, these frequencies are believed to heal injuries and relieve pain. It is also told that injured cats often purr to help soothe and heal themselves, which is not at all true. So if you'd like to go have this wonderful adjustable purring noise to soothe you, you can go to Furry Friend.
Furry Friend.
Yeah.
So been told that Todd will understand this reference. Dawn Taylor is the show pony.
Yes,
she another is. Furry Friend.
That's pretty funny. Yes, Don had the nickname of Show Pony for a while, so that's an old school reference there. Anyway, I kind of want to listen to this purr though. It's kind of nice.
It's very soothing. You're gonna lose me pretty quick.
Don't know. It is after 8 o'clock, and there is purring. I literally don't know how to turn it off though, so I guess I'll just shut that whole window. There's no off button. All right. Well, today this was actually. Is there any more chat stuff that we need to cover? Okay, well, this is actually a listener-submitted topic by Dave Baylor. I was talking to Dave Baylor of the Not Nerd podcast, which I'll talk about again later, actually.
Sweet.
Suggested that we do the topic of preservatives, which I thought fit nicely in with doing salt last week, and we talked about artificial flavors before.
And aluminum cans.
And aluminum cans, of course. It all fits together, and it all makes sense. So I looked into preservatives because it's one of those things that it's always... When you're talking about food product and labels, that's always the thing. Well, preservatives are bad. What do they do? They're these fake things that go into all our food and make us. I always heard, and I did, maybe you can look it up while I'm chatting about this, but I heard that bodies take longer to decompose now because we eat more preservatives, which seems a bit apocryphal to you.
Right.
Because don't they yank out your organs and fill you with like formaldehyde
right.
after you die?
Right.
So, but that was always the thing. It's like we eat so many preservatives that. But there's kind of an interesting history to it, and we'll get into some of the modern ones and whether or not they're healthy. But like we talked about last week with salt, there was a lot of things that people did the modern era of preservatives, I would say, kind of came around in the late 1800s, and then by the mid 1900s, you know, they'd been used and tested, and we found out a lot more about them. But things like salt. Salt and smoke, like when they would smoke meat, that would produce nitrates, which we'll talk about later. Sugar they would use, honey they would use, because honey is the only food that never spoils. So actually what I'm going to do, I've been thinking about this week, when I get home, although my sugar or my honey is crystallized, I want to put a grape inside a little thing that's filled with honey to see if the grape spoils. Or if it's because it's surrounded by food that never spoils. So that's going to be my fascinating experience when I get home, is putting a grape in honey. But there's three things. There's two different ways to do it. You can do a physical preservation, which is like when you make jams and jellies. I made jelly this past year, and there's enough sugar in them, and then you suck all the air out. And so you can keep those shelf stable for a long time. So you can dehydrate. You can freeze, you can refrigerate it. All those things will keep things from spoiling. And then there's the chemical side, which is salt, smoke, sugar. Things that they used to do in ancient times. The term koshering is where we get kosher salt. But to kosher something is just to completely cover it in salt to draw out all the blood and all of the things that would...
Okay.
So that I didn't know that before. And kimchi is another example of... how you would pickle something,
right.
Or you would preserve it in alcohol or let it ferment
right.
a little bit in order to preserve it. But according to the FDA, there's three purposes for the things that we kind of commonly put in our food as preservatives. And one is to maintain freshness. Two is to maintain and improve or improve nutrition. Number three is to improve maintain the texture and the flavor. So there are different types of preservatives that do different things. There's there are antimicrobial preservatives, and those prevent the degradation of or by bacteria, and that you can do that by pickling, salting, using honey, lactic acid, which is used a lot. lactic acid is something like if you've ever gotten a massage or if you've exercised a lot, they'll say, oh, your muscles are producing a lot of lactic acid. Make sure you have some water and stuff. So it's a naturally occurring thing that does, it is made from actually fermenting carbohydrates. So in order to bulk produce lactic acid, they'll ferment things like beets and other carbohydrates to make lactic acid. Then we get into something called nitrates and nitrites, which I'll talk about a little bit later. But the thing I always hear about hot dogs is the people, oh, there's so many nitrates in those.
Yes.
And I don't know. I never knew what they did or why they were bad or why they should be avoided. There is some controversy in it, but the nitrates are used in a lot of curing meats because it prevents botulism. And so lots of like the sausage and ham and hot dogs and salamis and all those cured meats often have nitrates. Now, when the reason there's some controversy is that because if you have nitrate or nitrite, there's nitrites and nitrates, which are similar, but they are different. When the nitrites combine with, where was it on my sheet here? When they combine with vitamin C, or that's something else, but the nitrites can convert to something called nitroamines in your stomach. And they found that that could lead to increased cancer, but it's not a huge significant source of cancer, but also a lot of the vegetables and leafy things we eat are full of nitrates and nitrites. So we're getting most of those naturally, unless you're eating like an ungodly amount of salami or okay. ham or something like that, where you're going to have bigger problems before the nitrites kill you off. There's something called sorbic acid. We're still looking at the why can't I say microbial very easily today? And we're using sorbic acids now to replace some of the nitrates and nitrites. And you can get those from tree berries, and you can synthesize them now too, but they basically do the same thing as the nitrates, but are just replacing it. So that takes care of a lot of the things, like when you're looking at meats and dairy and the things that will spoil, or my favorite Wikipedia entry that I looked at this week, which was about rancidity, which was just the process of things going rancid, which I love that word rancid. It's just so evocative and so like,
it's very specific and yeah, very yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
It's a little onomatopoeia.
The other way that a lot of our food spoils and needs to be preserved just because they're exposed to air and it's exposed to that oxidization that breaks everything down. And especially with fat and like with breads and stuff like that will make it spoil. So a big thing that we use for an antioxidant is ascorbic acid, which is just vitamin C. So we're adding, if you look at the back of packages, everything needs to be, you know, obviously listed in the ingredients panel. And from the FDA rule for a chemical preservative is, quote, when an approved chemical preserves, so it already has to be on their approved list, obviously. So when an approved chemical preservative is added, the ingredient must be included the common name as well as what it does. So like it will say ascorbic acid, but then in parentheses, it will say vitamin C to protect freshness.
Okay.
Or like a lot of times they'll use something called annatto. And then in parentheses, it will say to protect color or something like that. So all of the functions of the preservatives in your food need to be labeled, and they'll say what they do and give it the common name. So it's not hiding behind some sort of thing you can't understand. In wine and in a lot of beverages, there's naturally occurring sulfites and ethanol. Those are also used and synthesized as some preservatives for drinks. Now, there's something that I'd only heard in the context of water bottles that makes sense, and it was a thing. It's not made out of was it BHT? Like, you'll look on water bottles, and the old ones say,
right,
no longer made out of BHT or something, right, which is a preservative that we did use in food packaging and some food that's being replaced by something called BHA because it seems to be. The other one wasn't necessarily dangerous, but it I think it leached a little more into the food than they cared for. So they're kind of phasing out of BHT and using BHA instead.
Best BPA-free water bottles?
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's something different then. That must have been an additive
BPA
for plastic.
Plastics, yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, anyway, so that was kind of the same idea as that, but a different chemical compound. And then there's something that is called tosopherols, which are basically vitamin E, which is another thing that prevents that oxidization from happening. So there's obviously the canning that you can also do, which doesn't do anything magic. It just removes the air from the thing that you're trying to save. And actually, it was developed during a contest that Napoleon had to give a prize for someone who could figure out how to keep food on the ships that were going out on sea for a long time. And a guy named Nicholas Appert in 1795 developed canning in glass jars, which is replaced. It started commercially in 1910 using metal cans, which immediately gave everyone lead poisoning.
Right.
So they started using different cans for that.
Oops.
Which is kind of funny. We also irradiate our food, which is just blasting them with ionizing radiation and bursts of high intensity X-rays. And they do this, and help me parse the sentence because I kind of understand. So they do this, the advantage of irradiating food, it disrupts the DNA of the bacteria, so the bacteria can't continue to grow. It doesn't make the food radioactive, but it can affect the color and texture. They'll do it, the two examples they gave was animal carcasses, makes sense, and strawberries. But they say the advantage to irradiating food is to, quote, enable food packaging and preparation in which there is less person-to-food contact, thus reducing the possibility of contamination. Right. So does that mean they're getting people off when they can get people away from it?
Exactly. So you've got machines only touching anything.
Okay.
And so, just removing people from the process is going to remove any contamination from the process.
Okay, yeah. So they do, irradiate. And they'll always hear, like when they talk about chicken nuggets and stuff like that, well, they bleach the food and then they irradiate it. And like some of that is true. And they do, I guess we need to hold another show on chicken nuggets. But I guess the big question is, are these preservatives bad for you? Like, do they have health consequences? And I think the short answer is no, they're not. We've been using them for a very long time now, commercially, at least since like the 50s. But like I said, there are some things that we're moving away from, and you might want to look out for, but it's not, like I said, they're not huge issues. And I was talking before about the nitrites and the nitrates. Those are considered, and it's funny, those are considered probably carcinogenic, excuse me. But every time I would read something like that, it would always be like, by the state of California. Because the state of California labels everything as a possible cancer carcinogenic. But the sodium nitrate specifically is in the stomach, we talked about before. There was that small increase of gastric cancer, but like that person was eating an inordinate amount of like head cheese and salami and stuff like that.
Right.
So probably from something else.
Right.
There's also something called sodium benzate, which I believe is in a lot of soft drinks. When that sodium benzate combines with vitamin C and either heat or light, it becomes cancer, apparently. So they are moving away from that. But the FDA uses a classification called GRAS, G-R-A-S, which is generally regarded as safe for all of these. And I didn't want to just follow my own preconceived narrative about their not being terrible things about preservatives. So I did research and look into like, are they bad? And I searched specifically for how are they bad or should we be avoiding them? And there really is, outside of those couple things that we talked about that are kind of controversial, but kind of not really, doesn't seem to be a lot of evidence, like hard evidence that says these are bad for you. Like even in way higher concentrations, the things that we use, and like I said, some of it is vitamin C, some of it is vitamin E, some of it is just, most of it is organic and naturally occurring that you can synthesize as well, but they all come from natural sources for the most part. There were some claims that preservatives you found an slight increase in asthma and hyperactivity, but that was also like in hyperactivity in kids who already experience hyperactivity or right. who already experience. Right. And there is, I think, in what did it say? In women over the age of 30 will sometimes react to, is that what you just found?
No.
You were just nodding in agreement, pointing to your screen about something different.
Barbara Reynolds is online with us, and she said a statement that I was about to say, which is, I think, everything in moderation.
Right.
Like, it's anything that, orange juice can kill you
if you have
extreme amounts of it.
Sure.
And so I think me and my diet and I need to reduce the extreme amount of sugar in my diet, for example, especially refined sugar, because I love candy and I just can't stop eating candy. I
found it's not candy, but I found mini meringues at Safeway. My mom I knew they existed, but I haven't had them a long time. And my mom bought some at Trader Joe's. Those are so good.
Yeah.
They have raspberry mini meringues.
Yeah. And they're over by the macaroons.
Yes, they are.
So macaroons until 2 months ago, my entire life, I thought macaroons was synonymous with coconut.
Okay.
I always thought that
was
meant
the flavor
coconut. And so those little macaroon, the little macaroons that have little two shells with a thing in between that we know as the French pastry macaroons. I'm going to give you a picture
I don't like coconut or eat a lot of cookies, although I found I'm all about the pastry section at Safeway right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, you find that. I was just wrapping up, so I'll kind of finish that. But yeah, I think just like your friend said, if you're eating an amount of preservatives that is going to become harmful, you're already having the problem that needs to be fixed, in other words.
Exactly.
But there were, I was kind of surprised. There was one site that I've kind of had my eye on as far as being quote unquote fake news, although it's more clickbaity stuff. And that is the Livestrong site, the Lance Armstrong site.
Okay.
Has had such even on this one, it just said, oh, okay, I know what those are, macaroons. I would have never.
They're macaroons. Known
that, and so there's usually coconut?
Well, no, they're not.
We're looking at a picture of marketing.
So the deal is there is coconut macaroons. That's a thing.
Okay.
And those.
Well, what do those taste like then? Did you try them?
These that I've got a picture of are magnificent and they're amazing.
What are they taste
so
like?
This is what I know a macaroon is a.
It looks like a crab cake.
Yeah, it looks like a crab cake made out of coconut, and that tastes like acid to me. And so I hate those with
tastes like
every
Nintendo cartridge.
It tastes like a Nintendo cartridge. And so I hate coconut, sweet coconut. Savory coconut I'm fine with, like coconut on shrimp is magnificent. But sweet coconut is just terrible to me. And so I've always thought that these French pastries that are also called macaroons were based in coconut, and they're not. They're like meringue little cakes.
Are they crunchy or are they soft? They look like they would be moon
delicate. So the shell is.
We're both excited to talk about. I want to talk about moon pies. You want to talk about macaroons?
So it's a delicate meringue, crisp meringue cookie with a sweet thing in the middle.
Ooh, I'll have to try those.
And they're magnificent. They make a box of them at Trader Joe's that's over by the meringue things.
Okay.
And so my entire life I've missed out on these. Nick has ordered them like next to me at the little pastry.
Them.
I'm like, ooh, why would you get
those?
And then I had one that was like vanilla. I'm like, what? I was so mad because I'd literally been missing out on these for years. And so I'm probably better because of it. But they're fantastic.
The Livestrong site, I was really, I wouldn't say it's like flat out like craziness, but it was like a lot of unsubstantiated kind of conjecture-y things, and I've noticed that about the Livestrong site before that it's kind of badly researched. But then there's, have you heard of David Avocado Wolf?
No.
He Google like a picture of him or something like that, because you might have seen him before. Okay. But he is this famous, I guess, or popular kind of natural nutrition guy who is almost always completely wrong about everything, but he's got like the
including
everything
choice
about
choice of outfit and everything
and lanyard inexplicably. So, and if you go on, there's a lot of memes that go around,
yeah,
but he is crazy nonsense. So if you ever I would suggest if that you research what he says, if you don't want to just discard everything that he says just because I'm making fun of him. But you will see that it seems like his medical degree is in The Secret or whatever that book was that came out a couple of years ago.
Oh yeah.
We're just going through memes now, but a lot of them are just like those health things that you'll see that, are mostly just scare tactics about GMOs or I don't know. We're not really finding any decent ones, yeah, right here, but if you know what I'm talking about, then you know, but if not, then be on the lookout for the memes, from his. So yeah, it's a lot of, there's always a natural alternative, you know, go and go into the middle of a field and meditate and your cancer will go away type things. If you wear this lanyard made by whoever it was that he's wearing on the screen right now, I'll have to post a picture of him. Anyway, so that kind of sums up the preservatives thing for the most part. And you can go find, the FDA has some actually really good information about what the different things are, what to look for, and what they do. But for the most part, generally they're just, there's some more macaroons.
It turns out
macaron.
The difference is an O. So there's macaron with one O and there's macaroon with two O's.
Okay.
And so it's
both
not...
names are derived from amacare, which is Italian for to crush.
Amacare.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah. Meringue-based cookie versus the coconut macaroon, which is totally a different thing.
I'm going to have to go buy some of those after I finish the box of what I just bought from the bakery, which is, I don't know if it's called phyllo dough, but it's that pastry dough, but it's kind of like 900 layers of those, like, yes, made into a heart-shaped, and I don't know what they're called, but that's currently what I'm eating. But I have to stand on the porch because they're so messy that they just disintegrate all over the floor. Nick is, that's why. I was like, I smell food.
Nick is making us food.
Yay. So that about does it for today. If you want to hear more, you can go to markontodcast.com where you can hear all last 76 episodes of the Mark and Todd Cast, to get you through your day. We will also be doing another episode of Portland at the Movies coming up, for the Burt Reynolds movie Breaking In, which you can watch completely for free on YouTube.
Illegally, or you could properly rent it from a place that would rent that to you.
No, I don't know that you can do that.
I don't know.
I don't know that anybody has the
I don't think we can in. Advocate
I
people
think the
to.
Reason, hey, I'm just saying go to YouTube. If it's there, hey,
if
you
it's
might want to watch
you
it.
You might want to watch it.
If not, hey, that's
you
your
didn't
thing.
Learn about that from us.
It does not have a copyright infringement because I don't think the makers of Breaking In even know that it exists. The three of us watched it, and there's more people who have watched Breaking In.
It's like those people that buy debt. They just buy blocks of movies. They don't know who the owner is, but you know, just
shows
give it
up
away.
As part of the contract because they wanted Lord of the Rings and it came with it. But also coming up, actually, Dave Baylor was the person who suggested this topic, preservatives, which is great. And Dave Baylor is of the Not Nerd podcast, which I mentioned earlier.
Yep.
This week, I will be a guest on the Not Nerd podcast, which you can go to notnerd.com, and you can find them on iTunes as well. I listen to it weekly, and so should you. I don't quite know what we're going to be talking about. I have a list of tech questions that I'll be bringing to them, so do tune into that. Other than that, that is it for us. So we'll take you out with the Maximum Overdrive montage of the crazy waitress screaming, "We made you." We'll see you next time.
I don't give a ladybug.
You can! We made you!
Your mom.
We made you! Can't you understand?
No.
You can't do this! We made
you! And then they shoot her to death. All right, girls. Okay, now it's just she's dying in a big explosion. So we will see you guys next time.
All right, bye-bye.